showtime.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Pipes is writing down a lot of stuff. I'm just going to go from the gut. And joining us now, Coach Bielma.
Josh Whitman joining us now.
You get to say all the cool name drops.
Do it.
Brad Underwood, our guest.
College hoops.
How do you lose to Jackson State?
Call up every single person in the media that didn't put Kofi first team All-American. And I don't know, just play like clown noises.
I want to bet the Bears.
Oh. Michael Porter Jr. has been good, but he thinks the earth is flat, so I can't pick him.
Oh, boy.
Throw it up to Kofi, and he's just going to tear the rim off.
How is he so good?
All right, Hans, I'm going to mute you for a while.
Okay.
Oh, there's a timeout on the court!
So what we want to do is build a same-game parlay that will win all of us in money.
Maybe Rondale Moore could be Cooper Kupp, but he's not. Is it Instagram?
Yeah.
Is that what IG means?
I think you have to win the Big Ten title to win Big Ten Player of the Year.
Woohoo!
Wow, what a bad take.
It is The Drive, ESPN Radio 93.5. Lante, Trevor Valise, again booting Trevor out for this next half hour. Trevor will join us. Bob of the hour. We're going to do a little Major League Baseball next question. Philosophical. I think he's going to enjoy that. So we'll do that as we go along. But right now in studio with me is Clint Howard, longtime official, and also Sam Knox, also longtime official. He's the assistant executive director of the IHSA, and he's in charge of officials. So we decided to have both you guys come in because there's a problem going on right now. And in case somebody just joined us, Sam, part of the reason we're doing this is because we are running out of officials. Clint was showing me earlier the numbers, like 1,800 officials, but a lot of those are just people that still have license that don't actually officiate. There's, what'd you say, Clint? There's 800.
Sam would be able to know more how many IHSA schools and things that we have.
We're just a little over 800 total high schools. Yeah.
And you're talking, so you need a lot of officials, and we don't have enough is the idea. So that's kind of the goal today, is to figure out how we can get people involved. So why don't we go, before we start getting in some of this other stuff, what are some of the things that I could use to help me become an official, whether it be clinics, whether it be, like Clint said earlier last hour, about having, you know, a buddy that was in it for a long time and he kind of helped pull Clint along. What are some of the advantages I can take advantage of to help me become an official, Sam?
Clinics are a huge educational piece. We offer clinics all over the state, and a clinic is roughly a four-hour classroom, on-court, on-field session where you can learn from veteran officials. In this day and age, there are endless resources online. Mm-hmm. From officials education, there are YouTube sites, there are certain association sites that have written information, video information, much more than when Clint and I started years ago. Okay. So it's neat for us as a veteran officials to go online and use some of those resources as well.
I bet.
You know, the mentoring system is huge, having a buddy who's in the game, and you can call after a game and say, hey, I had this situation in the second quarter. Here's what we did. Is that right? Is that wrong? What's the rules say, et cetera? A lot of different ways to get better at this, because the challenge with officiating is this. When you walk onto the court or the field for the very first time, nobody knows it's your first game.
That's a
great nobody
point.
Knows that. And they expect you to be perfect, and then slowly get better from there.
Right, exactly.
Which is impossible. And we, as Clint referenced earlier, sometimes you do make a mistake, and sometimes you have to tell that player or that coach, hey, I missed that one,
exactly,
but I won't miss it again. So that's the whole thing with this. We're trying to get better. We're trying to be as good as we possibly can. And yes, we self-critique. We worry about calls that we missed. We hope we never have that situation again. But if we do have that situation, we know we're going to nail it the next time. But clinics are huge. Online education resources are huge.
Sure.
We've got a big summer conference that we have in July every year. This year it's at Normal West High School, and we invite officials from all over the state to come and learn and get better.
So, Clint, if I started a game and just went up to every fan there and just said, look, I'm brutal at this, but let's have some fun, is that a good way to go?
You know, honestly, I've seen officials do that. Now, if you do that at a freshman game or a junior high game, what I mean is, it's for lack of a better, you're kind of setting them up and they're expecting. If you do that before you walk out for a rivalry varsity game, You may not get the same reaction, but yeah, some of it is, you got to know when to use humor.
Exactly.
And so humor is an element you can use, but you got to use it on a very limited basis.
We're going to get into this a couple of times before this half hour is over, but Clint, if I tomorrow decided I wanted to become official, and we talked about this with Sam, I'll let you kind of answer it as well. What's the first step or steps? Let's take baseball. Obviously I need to go get the equipment. I need to get shin pads. I need to get all of that. I need to get the shirts. So for each sport, I know it varies a little bit. You got the pinstripes essentially for football, et cetera, and basketball. But what is the first thing I would need to do? Do I just contact the IHSA, fill out forms, pay money? How do I go about doing that?
Well, that's going to go basically on how in-depth you want to go. And okay. By that, I mean, another element that we have is we have local official associations.
Okay.
Here in Champaign-Urbana, we have the Champaign Officials Association. We have multiple associations when you start talking about Illini Basketball Association. So depending on what. So if you're talking about baseball, and you could reach out to the Champaign Officials Association, or if you're in Charleston, Mattoon, there's various associations all throughout. And they're going to help you with that. So using football as an example, a couple of the associations I belong to, if you come as a first-year official, you will buy maybe a shirt.
Okay.
And everything else, other veterans officials are going to hand you the flags and the down counters and
awesome.
Things. Baseball is the most expensive startup just because the protective gear behind the plate. But I will tell you that there's a first-year official around the Danville area who, Jerry Jinks, literally he outfitted with everything. He called me, hey, do you have a couple shirts? So that guy walked onto the field and hasn't spent a dime yet.
That's awesome.
So then when you look at the financial burden, when you look at the actual licensing, the IHSA does have mechanisms in place. They allow associations to give scholarships for a first year official.
Okay.
So, you know, there's things that they're trying to do to knock down those hurdles, money, finance, things like that. So if you reach out to an association and those are these other officials, we can help you with gear. We can help you with equipment. We can help you with rules books. We can help you navigate even through the IHSA.
Right.
You know, different application processes, kind of the things you need to do in the IHSA, just the online training. There's certain mandates that you have to do, the concussion protocols and things of that. Once that happens, your information is readily available to every associate or athletic director. And I tell people, and a brand new baseball official went through, did everything through the IHSA, and he sent me a message, and he goes, I got like 5 emails today.
Wow.
And so he went live, and he got 5 emails from athletic directors and mass emails saying, hey, we need umpires. And
I was like,
sometimes it's that easy. Yeah, it's that easy. So so the mentoring, the associations, those are things that can be put in place that will help you. So reach out to an official or go through the IHSA, contact me or any of the associations, and we'll be happy to help you through that.
Sam, it's $4.50 a gallon of gas. How is an official making money right now?
In some sports, and on some days, he's not.
Okay.
And that's a challenge, too. With gas being that expensive, officials have really tightened their geography and staying closer to home. That makes a lot of sense. Most guys are, you know, driving maybe within 30 minutes of home. Some guys go a little farther because they're not concerned about making money.
Exactly.
And in the end, none of us really are concerned about making money. Yes, we don't want to do this for free. We don't want to lose a lot of money. But at the end of the day, if we kind of break even, then we're in good shape. We're mainly doing it just for staying involved in the game and having fun with the high school sports. But you're right. Officials are concerned about driving far.
No doubt.
And at the end of the night, I get a $75 check for a basketball game, but adding up all my expenses, I made about $7.18.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody really wants to do that and be gone that long from home. But it's a reality. We don't know. You know, you can only control the things you can control.
Exactly.
So as Clint said earlier, officiating is beautiful because you can really be as flexible with your schedule as you want.
Right.
And in this day and age, coming off a 2-year stretch of COVID situation where a lot of people started working from home and flexible scheduling, et cetera, et cetera, I can't think of any part-time hobby or job that is as flexible as officiating. You can take as many games or as few games as you want. It's your calendar, so you fill it up all the way or just take one game a week. Completely up to you.
I've still never gone back, Clint, and figured out how much money I had to spend to play fast pitch softball in my life.
I was literally going to segue into that, and that's what I was going to say. When you spend out, you know, the money that you do in hobbies and fast pitch softball and you travel and the entry fees, but you look back at the fun you had.
Oh,
it's the same
my goodness.
Thing.
The memories of doing something like that is incredible. I had something on my mind, Clint, I was going to ask you, and I totally forgot. So let's go to the teaching moments. I know, Clint, you brought that up in the first hour. By the way, Clint Howard is our guest, also Sam Knox. Clint, when it comes to teaching moments, obviously not every kid is going to want to hear an umpire say, hey, you know, if you would have done this or – but where do you understand kind of where you can make it a teaching moment?
So, well, the way I approach teaching moments is I never coach a kid.
Okay.
And so a lot of times I'll use a home plate umpire as an example. Catchers nowadays, they mimic the higher levels.
Mm.
So we're starting to see the catcher that's really taking the pitch from the bottom. They're sweeping the glove up. And it used to be the old frame.
Right.
And the 0-2 pitch, the catcher's always set up off the plate, and they hit the 0-2, and everybody yells. And, you know, you hit your spot. You threw it off the plate where it is. Or I'll get a catcher that'll move the glove in, and I'll literally whisper in his ear, how can I call a borderline pitch if you thought it was outside and you moved your glove 5 inches
right.
in?
That's
you're telling
point.
Everyone in the stadium it was outside because you had to move it. That's why I didn't call it. So that's kind of the teaching moments in the sense like that. If I do tell something, I'll go over and tell a coach, Coach, I apologize. I wasn't coaching your kid. And I'm like, this is what I said to him. And they appreciate that.
Sure.
When it comes to, like, attitude or unsportsmanlike, that's not my job to coach or teach.
Right.
And that is – so my job to teach him is to basically inform him of the reaction. And he'll know either through my body language or a result of things of that. And that's where you go to the coach. And you can do that by coaching through, you know, telling the coach
exactly.
and allow the coach to do it. And plus, the coaches really appreciate that.
Yeah, Clint, so. it's reactionary, right? Yeah. I'm playing second base. Guy throws me the ball on a tag, and I know I get him. And you call it safe, and I'm like, what? I mean, it's not like I'm disrespecting you as an official. I'm just reacting to what I feel my body is like, what?
You notice the difference as an official.
Okay.
And by that, I'll say, I'll use a basketball or use whatever. You know a spontaneous reaction.
Exactly.
And it's just, not only is it the bad reaction, it's the good reactions. You know the difference between a kid who is physically or emotionally excited from just, you know, hitting a walk-off or doing something.
Or he just had a great block and you called a foul on the hand.
And you can clearly tell the difference of the athlete that wants to separate themselves and do something to draw attention.
Yes.
And so you can tell the difference between a true emotional response and a kind of a plan, look at me. So,
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
That totally does. All right, I'm going to let you both address this, the fan. The fan that gets out of hand, right? And I'm not going to sit here and say that I haven't said it. I don't ever, you know, I don't curse. I don't do any of that. I don't sit and wear on them. What do you want to hear from a fan? Obviously, perfect would be the COVID year where there's no fans.
You know, actually, and you hit
you
that.
You probably hated it.
We laughed and we joked about it, but that year that I did basketball, I missed it.
I bet.
And you really do miss the excitement of the gym, the excitement of the game, so you do miss that as a fan. The only thing is the education of the fan that you want. You want to know that a fan, they feel like just because they paid the $4,
right.
that, you know, you as a basketball official, that's part of it. You have to take it. And that's the only thing we want to relay to people. And I will tell you as an official, and there are schools and there are fan bases that I just don't take games at.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, you're not going to say anything.
Well, that's a
but
big
if,
statement.
If I have a choice from, you know, place, you know, venue A and venue B, and they both need a referee, I take venue B because I know when I go there, the fan, you know, the fans, the coaches, the players are one way, and I'll stay away from fan A. And that might be part of our problem because what's happening is new officials are getting access to these same games. And so you may have a young official
that
who sees a varsity
venue a or B.
game. Yeah. And then all of a sudden they walk into a rivalry game in a snake pit and they get, you know, they get swarmed. And then all of a sudden they're like, wow. You know, what did I do? So maybe that's something. I don't know, but maybe that's something we should look at. And that comes to that mentoring thing.
Right.
And, you know, you got to have a certain – you got to have a thick skin, but nothing saying that you have to take physical or verbal abuse for no reason.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Sam, is it the fan that just continuously wears you out that really drives you nuts? Or is it in your ear okay for somebody to say, oh, man, that looked outside, and move on? I mean, where's the line for you?
The line for me is the four-letter words.
Oh, yeah.
And the swearing.
Okay. You mean golf.
Well, yeah, if you want to call it that.
Right.
That's how I golf anyway.
Exactly.
But, yeah, there's no place for that in high school or junior high sports,
exactly.
in my opinion. I mean, the parents should be there to watch their kids, support their kids, win or lose. I know that's easier said than done. Again, I'm a parent as well, but – you know, at the end of the day, it's the kids' experience, not not the mom and dad's. We had our chance back in the day.
It's
right?
So true.
And so let the kids today experience the game and have the fun. But I can put up with a lot of stuff. I'm a pretty chill person. You know, those things, I go home and tell my wife every night. She say, hey, how was the game?
Yeah.
Was it fun? I say, yeah. It seems like the older I get, the more fun it is, because those little chirpy comments, they don't bother me
exactly.
at all. Getting out on a basketball court is kind of my getaway time.
Yeah.
Everybody has their hobby, fishing, hunting, golf,
good call.
Playing poker, playing fast pitch softball, whatever. Officiating is my hobby, and I love to do it, and it's kind of fun because you get to bring a check home at the end of the night. There
right.
aren't a lot of hobbies where you get
right.
paid to do that
Whoa,
hobby, right?
That's weird.
But again, you know, those comments from the crowd really don't bother me. But I know I'm built differently than
sure.
teenagers or young people getting into the game. And at some point, everybody's tolerance level is a little bit different.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can only hear that person chirp at you so many times before you say, okay, I can't stand that person.
That's enough.
I'm going to turn around and look and see who it is. That's enough.
Yeah.
And we encourage our officials, don't take it into your own hands.
Got it.
Seek out the athletic director. If he or she is there, seek out the principal if he or she is there. Let those folks deal with the fans. Unfortunately, at baseball, softball in the spring, the principal and AD aren't always there like they are at football and basketball
yes.
games. So sometimes officials do have to deal with it or work through the head coach to try to get that fan to simmer down and just enjoy the game for what it is.
I have a – oh, go ahead, Kurt.
I laugh at this, and your listeners, if they hear it, the next game you go to as a plate umpire, I will bet you a steak dinner I can tell you his parents – in the first three pitches of the game.
Wow.
Because in the first three pitches of the game, you'll either hear live right there, stay right there, or where was that blue?
Uh-huh.
Because it starts immediately. It's got to be. So they'll kind of laugh now when they hear that the next time they're at the thing.
Makes sense.
I've only thrown out players and fans two in my entire career.
Wow.
It was the same game, and it takes a lot. So what I mean by that is, you don't necessarily – I'm out there doing my job.
Yep.
I don't necessarily hear, especially football. You don't hear a lot because you're far enough away.
I bet.
Basketball seems to be the most because fans feel like it's part – you know, they're entitled to, they're allowed to.
I can understand that.
So they can kind of get on you. Baseball and softball, I feel that sometimes they don't do it as hard because everyone sees them.
Everybody can hear
you. Yeah, everyone can see you.
That's a great point.
And so there's a certain amount where they'll only take it so far. So through fans, and honestly, I can say us as officials, if you do a consistent job, you hustle, and you're in the right spot, you don't get as much because a judgment's a judgment. But that's my opinion on fans.
I want to ask you guys, how young is too young, and would you love to see more of the youth? But I got to tell you one funny story. And I'll brag a little bit about my show, which I really appreciated, but my son was playing at Bishop Mack up in Kankakee earlier in basketball in the fall, and I go up there, and of course he's got a shooting shirt on that has Tay on the back. So I'm up there, and he runs by me, and he kind of gives this motion like I need a water. So I'm standing there, and I'm just kind of leaning there, and look, it's a Saturday morning game. There's hardly any fans there at all, and one of the officials looks over, and he goes, hey, are you Lante that does the radio show? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, love listening to your show. And I was like, gosh dang it. And he's like, what? And I said, well, I was going to come up here knowing nobody knew me. I was going to rail you guys the entire game. And he started laughing. He goes, nope, you've been identified. I was just laughing. I can't go anywhere, man, without being able to get called out on that.
But see, put you on check right
it did.
There.
And then I had to behave the entire time. In fact, later in like the third quarter, there was a call that it looked like the kid's foot was maybe out of bounds and dead ball timeout. And I'm kind of standing up there in the crowd, and I'm like, hey. And he looks up at me and he goes, don't want to hear it. I said, yeah, that he was out. But it was kind of funny, and I always enjoy doing that. All right, what's too young? Is a high school junior? I mean, I did intramurals at Villa Grove, you know. And,
absolutely.
And you talk about, like at VG, I had Brian Jackson, who was a senior, Lante, a junior. So any call that was wrong, all the seniors in Brian's class came and yelled at me. And I'm like, Brian's the one that made the call.
Yeah.
So I understood back then the idea of, okay, I'm not going to be liked here in this game until I'm a senior, and then I get a little credibility. But what would be the ultimate perfect age, Sam, to hire? By the way, this is Sam Knox, which we really appreciate him making the drive over, assistant executive director with the IHSA in charge of officials. Also, Clint Howard, longtime official, in with us. We've got about 5 minutes here, so I want to make sure we get out again. What's the key to becoming an official and how you can do that? But what about a perfect age, or is that really kind of a dumb question, honestly?
It's not a dumb question. Our minimum age to license is 17 years old.
Okay.
But in many ways, in my opinion, I think that's pretty young for an official to get started when you're still in high school.
Fair enough.
My daughter is 18. She's licensed in volleyball. She did a few junior high games this year. Her younger brother is 17, and he licensed in basketball.
That's awesome.
But he refereed with dad to help get started.
You should have had more kids.
Well, yeah.
We should take care of this.
We should have a five-man crew in football. But, you know, he said to me the other day when we were umpiring at the beautiful place in Rantoul.
Yes.
He said, "Dad, I'm so glad that you're my partner because you helped teach me the way." He said, "I would be nervous umpiring with somebody else who might bark at me a little bit or might teach me the wrong way." He goes, "You just kind of tell me how it is and here's how it's." So those young people really need to be mentored in the right way. But you asked, what's the perfect age of an official? I think somebody really in their late 30s or early 40s, in my opinion.
Perfect.
They've played. Maybe they've coached. They've been around the game a long time. They have enough games under their belt and experience to know how to work with coaches, how to work with kids, how to do. Because to me, this boils down to three simple things. You've got to know the rules, no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. Know the rules. You've got to use a lot of common sense when those rules apply. And the third big piece, and maybe the most important, is people skills.
Yeah.
And you really don't have great people skills, in my opinion, until you're in those late 30s, early 40s and beyond like we are.
I agree.
Where you can relate to people. And sometimes now we're officiating coaches who are much younger than us. And they think they're the next Mike Krzyzewski or the next, you know, you name it. And they think they know everything. And it's like, listen, coach, we're not here to give you a bad deal. Here's the rule and here's why we called it that way. And it's easier to talk to coaches when you've been there and done that and have a lot of games experience to know what you're talking about.
I think that's credibility.
Yes,
and that comes
from
credibility. And one of the things that they teach in the IHSA is, you know, you show up, you got to look the part.
Right.
You know, clean uniforms. I mean, your image is going to, you know, present a certain amount of credibility. And that goes right back to what we were talking about. If you know the rules and can communicate them, you're going to have a little more credibility with the coaches and fans.
You guys have both mentioned this, the coaching. I coached youth, you know, with my boys, then coached some junior high at St. Thomas there in Philo. And I got to know the officials really well, you know, and it's kind of a game, right? It's kind of a fun game inside the game that, you know, you're talking to the guys as they're coming down. And every once in a while, there's a bad call. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'll say something and just kind of give them grief like, "Ooh, man, I don't know about that." And they're like, "Yeah, I see it. I hear you, Tay." But, you know, it's one of those where it feels like you earn your respect with them. And that's where it makes it so much easier to where when I showed up at a gym and I saw those two guys walk in, I'm like, sweet. It's going to be – and it's not because I thought I was going to get a call. It was just because I had a good rapport with them and I knew that they were fair. Are there such things as makeup calls with officiating?
No.
In my opinion, no.
Okay.
There is no makeup call, but I will tell you this. In my opinion, what makes a good official, a good crew, a good people that can manage the game.
Yes.
And so I will fully tell you that when games start to get out of hand it's an official that can keep that game level.
Totally.
Not
agree.
Letting one team get away, not another. And so I think those are perceived as makeup calls, but there's no makeup calls
Fair
in
enough.
A sense of. But there's definitely a game flow or game management.
That's fair.
And that's kind of managing, you know, excitements, the circumstances, the runs. I think that's just all part of it. And that's the other thing as officials that our job is to do is, one, to make sure they have fun, you know, to protect them. So
are blowouts the worst part?
They can be challenging
in
a lot of ways because that's where a lot of that common sense and the people skills kick in.
Exactly.
Because, you know, at that point, the rules are the rules. But what you're trying to do is get through the game,
Amen.
Help both teams get to the finish line without anybody getting hurt.
Yep.
Everybody's still having fun, keeping sportsmanship in perspective. And like Clint said, we're not doing any makeup calls. We would never do that. But you know, you're trying to get through a game and game manage that. And if you're a football official and there's a holding foul right in front of you and everybody sees it, but the ball went clearly the other way and the running back was 30 yards away,
exactly.
You let that one go and move on because it keeps the clock running and let's get to the end of the game. Because by those points in blowout games, no matter what the sport, the coaches are just looking for, let's get this thing over with. Let's get out of here without anybody getting hurt and move on and try again someday.
All right, Clint Howard, Sam Knox, I'm going to give you guys the final say here. Clint, how dangerous is this becoming in terms of 5 years down the road with officials?
Well, we need to start, in my opinion, bringing up groups of officials because, let's face it, officiating is a profession.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't actually know what you don't know until you've done this for a few years. So even if we make a huge push today, those officials are not going to be the varsity officials that are handling the games for, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 seasons.
Makes sense.
We need to get officials out because if we push people too fast, they don't come back. We have a lot of first-year officials. We have a smaller amount of second-year officials. It's that third year they don't come back.
Wow.
And so what's happening is they come out that first year, they're excited, they mm-hmm. want to, you know, they don't know, they want to do things. That second year, they start to wander out on their own, and that third year, they jump into the deep water, and they don't come back.
That darn venue A.
So, yes, exactly right. So we need to get officials brought up, get them in with associations, and allow them to work lower-level games. And one of the things that I always try to say is those lower-level games, the athletes are playing them because they're not progressed enough athletically and things of that. Is understand that that's where our officials are cutting their teeth as well.
Yep.
You're not getting a varsity official on most cases doing a junior high game. You know, that's where we're trying to get these officials up. And
great
so
point.
You have to understand as a mom and a dad, we're training them as well.
Great
you
point.
Know, the men, the women are bringing up. So I think we're at a position right now, and this show, obviously, I want to thank you for having us on.
I think we need to do it again.
Yeah, we need some officials to come out and umpires, and I think that's what we need to do. We need to answer any questions they have. We need to
perfect.
Make them comfortable. And once we make them comfortable, then I think it'll be less scary and we can get them out there.
Clint Howard, great job, buddy.
Thank you.
Sam Knox, can we change this? Can this thing be reversed? And how much of a – I'm sure this is a topic all the time you guys talk about at the IHSA level.
We do. We talk about it a lot. It concerns us a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We knew this was coming, but I think the whole COVID experience really accelerated that.
Right.
And many people, you know, we all who love sports sat home a lot last year and 2 years ago and didn't have sports to go to. And unfortunately, some of those officials maybe at the end of their career,
right.
who maybe had 4 to 5 good years left, they kind of said, you know what?
Yeah.
I don't really need that in my life anymore. I'm
I know
done.
Somebody that did that. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of examples around the state from that. But looking at overall numbers, we're under 10,000 officials statewide right now.
Right.
5 years ago, we were at about 12,000 officials. So if 5 years from now, we lose another 3,000 officials, you asked me early in the program, on a scale of 1 to 10, where are we? We'll be really close to 10 at
wow.
that point.
Wow.
And that really does concern me. But Clint is absolutely right. We've got to start now and start growing officials now who are going to be ready for varsity games and big-time conference matchups within the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
Clint's going to be around a while. Guys like me are going to be around a while. But guys who are getting 60s and
sure.
early 70s, their time is short.
Yep.
And we're thankful that they've given us their time
amen.
And dedication over the years. Probably some of them officiated your games and your games, Lon,
right.
and my games too. And we're glad that they did that. But now it's time for us adults and even younger adults than us to really start to think about helping out the high school experience. Because without officials, kids can't play.
Amen.
And it's starting to happen all around the state, suburban area in Chicago, way down in the deep south, east, west, everywhere. We're hearing about many games with one umpire,
yep.
or some games are getting flat out canceled because the
wow.
school athletic director or the assigner can't find anybody.
Yeah.
And that's the scary part. And in the end, it's not about us as officials.
Yeah.
The games will go on. It's not about us. It's about teenagers having a good experience, whether they win a state championship
yep.
or whether they don't win a single game, having that normal high school experience of going to school, representing their town and community in sports. It gives me chills to talk about
I
it.
Bet.
But that's what we're all about
yep.
here is helping young people enjoy their high school experience and have some fun.
Can you imagine me telling my grandkids, well, you can't play these games because you don't have officials?
Mm-hmm.
I just can't imagine. I can't. And I know I was visiting with Coach Staub the other day from Central, and they played a game in Peoria and said there was one umpire and he did the game behind the pitcher.
Yes.
Like you're talking yeah, T-ball
absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely.
You know, or something like that. So
well, and
crazy.
Honestly, it's, you know, it's the best angles you can try
yeah,
to get on
yeah,
the bases.
Right.
I mean, you want me to stay on a pitch that's a curveball and stay in the zone while a runner's stealing second.
Yep.
And now you want me to get a swipe tag to the back. It's, you know, it's not real
that's
fair.
That's tough.
Yep.
Clint, quit ripping my kid off.
That's right.
Hey, guys, I can't thank you enough. We're going to do this again.
Okay.
We're going to do this again. We'll give it some time. Hopefully we get some positive feedback from this. So this was really important, I think. And again, it's something that I obviously see. It's one thing down the road. I know travel ball didn't get into that this time, but as an umpire, as an official, you can go to a weekend travel, like in Rantoul, let's say. You make a lot of money in one weekend doing that. So that's one area. We talk about gas. That's a spot you go, your position for the entire weekend. So there's certain things. Real quick, Clint, if people are going to text in and ask, is there a certain website I should send them to? Should I send them an email to you? What would you do? Or maybe the Champaign area here.
The first thing I would always do is I would go to the IHSA.org. And there's actually a tab on there for officials and resources and how to become an official. And that'll answer a lot of their questions.
Perfect.
If they want to reach out locally, they can actually just Google Champaign Officials Association.
Okay.
There's numerous associations. Basketball, baseball, softball, volleyball.
Got it.
There's a lot of sports. And again, I don't do volleyball, but we have many, you know, volleyball, soccer. We don't do soccer at Champaign Association. But if they Google that in this area, that would be a great place.
Perfect.
And there's actually, they can email in, they can contact us through that.
Perfect.
That's how I would first reach out.
Okay. Or just reach out to me. I've got Clint's number. I'll call him out.
There you go.
I'm totally kidding.
Absolutely.
I would not do that. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Can't thank you enough for doing what you do. All right, when we come back, Trevor Valise and I are going to do a little MLB next question. We'll do it next. It is The Drive. It is The Drive, ESPN Radio 93.5, Lante, Trevor Valise. I thought that was really interesting and really cool to visit with a couple of guys that are in the officiating, umpiring, refereeing business and just what we need to do on that. So I know we've gotten some questions coming in on the U of I Illini Lake text line. I'll definitely reach back out to Clint Howard about that. And again, if any of you are interested in getting a hold of either one of those guys, Clint Howard or Sam Knox, about maybe starting your career in that business, whether it be for basketball, baseball, football. I think football is the one thing I wouldn't do because I never played it, right? I obviously have watched football my whole life, but I never played at the high school level. So I think that'd be the hardest one for me. I think I could do baseball. Although baseball is one of those that has so many stinking rules that you don't even think of. There are so many things you don't think of in baseball. And then, of course, basketball. And, you know, I'm one of those guys that would certainly – I think I could handle doing, like, junior high basketball, maybe smaller versions of baseball and stuff. I don't know that I'd want to do high school. I don't know that I'd have the guts. You know, I'd be the guy that showed up at the gym – for a high school basketball game or the field for high school baseball, and I would literally talk to everybody on the sidelines before the game started.
Yeah, you'd fraternize.
And yeah, I would.
You can't really do that as a referee. But.
Right. I would do that so then if I make the – not if, when I make the bad call, they're going to be like, well, seemed like a nice guy.
He did talk to every single parent before the game. So
come on, Tay! I mean, I can already hear it. They'd be yelling at me. And then I'd be like, if you yell at me, you're going on the radio tomorrow. I'm going to absolutely make fun of you on the radio. So, yeah, so I've got you. I've got everybody over the barrel there if I ever become an official.
Good to know.
All right, we talked about it yesterday. It's time to do a little next question, Major League Baseball. Is John Gross ready for this?
He is.
Let's see.
Next question.
Ah, there he is. Johnny Gross. Getting it done. MLB next question. We start now.
Now, you wrote these.
I did.
Do you want to ask them?
I'll ask them to you, and I'll chime in.
Okay.
Is that fair?
That sounds good.
Okay, so music's playing. Here we go. Trevor Valise, the White Sox are struggling. They're in third place in the AL Central. How worried should Sox fans be? Obviously, some injuries. Those occurred last year as well. Not the same. Well, almost. But they had injuries last year, still won the division, and made the playoffs. They're in third place in the Central Division. I still think it's a division, you know, with Minnesota, Detroit, et cetera. I still think they're going to be fine, and ultimately the cream will rise to the top, as they say. But how worried should a Sox fan be about what's going on the south side of Chicago?
Detroit was my trendy pick.
It was.
To maybe be a dark horse, and they're in last place. So, You know, everything went right for my Detroit bet so far in terms of the White Sox getting out to a bad start, but then it turns out the Tigers got off to an even worse start.
Even worse.
So
yeah.
I digress on that. I wouldn't be too worried.
Okay.
I'd be annoyed. I'd be very annoyed at how this is now seemingly played out. I mean, we joked, you know, someone was saying this is the year from hell, and I'm like, you already had that.
Yeah.
Last year.
Exactly.
with all your injuries and your struggles. So, I mean, you definitely factor in a combination of, you know, Keuchel has just been bad.
Yeah.
I mean, they're talking about DFAing him.
Ugh.
He's been so bad. And obviously Giolito, he's back now, but he was a little bit hurt, missed a few starts.
Guess who's back?
Lance Lynn, the least likely person, I think you would say.
Would agree.
To miss 2 months out of nowhere. He's the workhorse that never does. It'd be like if John Lester in the middle of his Cubs run was out for 3 months. I'd be like, what?
What do we do?
It's physically impossible. There's no way. And then obviously Eloy is a big problem.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if it's just his nature or if they need to teach him something, but the injuries he's having are so reckless, I guess is the word.
Like
he just runs to first base and stumbles and then he's hurt. He rams into an outfield wall and he's hurt. He's like, I don't know, he's like a bull in a china shop
something.
Exactly. You know, like he's so physically gifted, but it's just like someone sets him loose and he's just like a Tasmanian devil running around out there getting hurt. So maybe you
blindfold him.
Maybe you DH him even more when he gets back. I don't know.
Yeah.
Cease has been a huge bright spot.
He has.
We talked about that a little bit yesterday too, but I'm not, if I'm a White Sox fan, I'm not panicked.
I'm not either.
A, because you mentioned the division you're in.
Yep.
I don't really think, the Twins will definitely be a thorn in your side as they always have been, but I don't really think you're looking up, since you're in third right now, at that division going like, oh no, you know, we're digging ourselves a hole we can't dig out of.
I'm with you.
But at the same time, I would say the combination of the injuries, the defensive struggles and miscues have been bad.
Mm-hmm.
I think they lead the league in errors right now.
Wow.
And Tony La Russa has not really endeared himself to anyone there.
I would agree. I would agree.
So I would be annoyed by all that stuff. I'd be frustrated by it, but I would not be panicking yet.
Yeah, a couple of things. Tim Anderson still hitting well, hitting over like 320. That's what he does, right? He goes out, hits .300 and wins the batting title every year. That dude is amazing. Jose Abreu's finally showing signs to me. I've been ultra impressed with his entire career with the White Sox. Truly, ultra impressed. But you're right, he's old, and he's showing that now. And, you know, I know these injuries with Robert and Jimenez. I mean, obviously those make a difference in the tallies, but there's just not a lot of home runs and long balls for the White Sox, and I feel like that is something they need to feast on. Because, you know, that offense needs to lead this team. Even as good as the pitching can be, and even as much talent as you have with those arms, I still feel like the hitting, the bats, need to carry the White Sox. So that's the one thing that I'll watch going forward. All right.
Next question.
All right, the next question for you is, we touched on this yesterday, but I want to ask, in your mind, Dylan Cease struck out 11 batters 2 days ago, including striking out Mike Trout 3 times. When it's all said and done, and he's retired and sitting on a beach somewhere, will that be his favorite all-time story? And what I mean, Trevor, by this, I'm kind of joking, but in another way, Mike Trout might end up being the best baseball player that's ever played. And if you could sit down and tell your grandkids as you're sitting on a beach at Siesta Key when you're 65 years old, hey, do you guys know who Mike Trout is, right? Oh, yeah, you mean the best player ever? Yeah, I struck him out 3 times one day. Like, is that the best story he'll ever have, you think? Or is he going to lean back on that high school game where he threw a no-hitter or Little League when he struck out 27? I'm making those up
because
I don't know.
For his sake, I hope that he has a better one in terms of, like, I don't know, going...
I won a World Series.
Yeah, going 8 innings in a World Series Game 7 or something. But, hey, this is not a bad one to fall back on.
No!
No matter what else happens the rest of his career. He's 26, you know, so he's not like... He's not one of those young pitchers who's young, if
right.
that makes sense. I mean, he's going to turn 27 in the middle of this season, which is...
How dare him.
It isn't old by any means, but he's not... 22. His ERA is great, 2.48. I mean, he's striking out a ton of guys per 9 innings. His whip is under 1. I'm giving you the layman stats.
Not
for
good,
you there.
Under 1.
The back of the baseball
card. Oh, wait,
card.
That is good.
That is good.
Okay.
The back of the baseball card stuff.
Right.
11 strikeouts against the Angels in the previous game, 9 against the Royals, 8 against the Rays, 8 against the Tigers. He's given up one home run this entire year so far.
Wow.
So he's been really, really good.
He has.
For the White Sox.
Well, look, and the Sox still have the Cubbies to play. So, you know, I mean, that's...
that will definitely cure what ails you.
Got another one tonight.
For the most part.
Got another one tonight, we hope. All right, let's do another one. Johnny Gross.
Next question.
Okay, this is more... We're doing like more of a philosophical next question here, and you'll understand what I mean.
Okay.
The Yankees are in first. And, you know, they want to stretch of like, what, 10 straight, 11, whatever it is. Are they still the team that everyone hates in Major League Baseball? Or in your generation, Trevor, is it more of the Dodgers? Or is there a team, maybe because of Houston and the cheating with the banging on the trash can, is that something that elevated the Houston Astros to number one on your most hated list? So what I'm asking you to do is take away the Cardinals as your most hated team and just tell me in general who you hate the most. And I know hate is a strong word, but we can use that in sports because it's sports and this is what we do. I am a guy that has my whole life had to hear about how the New York Yankees have the most World Series titles more than my Cardinals are in number two. I've also had to see my entire life the Yankees always carry the highest payroll. That has changed some in the last decade. But forever, nobody ever spent more money than the New York Yankees. And just when you thought they couldn't spend any more, they signed like Alex Rodriguez to a $325 million deal or something. I mean, that how long ago was that? He signed for like $300 million, if he actually did. I can't remember. It seems was about right.
Yeah.
And just every year, Brian Cashman, you know, George Steinbrenner would give Brian Cashman the ability to just go out and spend even more money. And so I just hated the Yankees. And I know sometimes it's good for sports to have that evil villain. But to me, it was always the Yankees. And I think it will always be the Yankees as long as I don't get to include the Cubs, which obviously I really can't stand the Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
But how about for you and the younger generation, the idea that in your lifetime, the Yankees haven't necessarily always spent the most money and they haven't necessarily won that many World Series, maybe in your collective age of understanding sports, so let's say the last 14 years. So who's
haven't won anything more or less. I mean, it was 09.
That's true. Isn't that sad?
And it's 22.
So how about for you? I mean, because I'll admit it's lost a little luster, but all you've got to do is show me that the Yankees are in first and all of a sudden in the playoffs and I'll be like, oh, I can't stand them. I hope they get their asses whipped tonight. So how about you?
It's not the Yankees. I don't care about them at all. It's sort of like how your generation hates Michigan football. I have no opinion on Michigan football one way or the other because half of my life, Michigan football was Rich Rod running it into the ground.
Right.
And I'm like, Brady Hoke. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, I'm supposed to hate these guys?
Good point.
I don't even care, you know?
It's a good point.
So it's similar with the Yankees where I get it. They're sort of the Death Star franchise that everybody hates. But I don't. I mean, I think Aaron Judge is a fun player. I love Rizzo, who's been off to a hot start for him. I don't hate the Yankees.
Okay.
Probably the Astros are the villain team of my generation.
Fair
just
enough.
Because of what they did. I don't hate the Dodgers. I don't feel like they're a hateable team. I hate what they stand for in the idea of every single year, if there's three good pitchers and three good hitters, you can guarantee they're going to get two of each.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that I very much hate fundamentally.
Yep.
But Mookie's a super fun player. You know, I've never hated Clayton Kershaw.
Fair
Walker
enough.
Buehler's really good, so I don't hate the
Dodgers.
So
no Scott Brosius types that you just couldn't
Not
stand.
Really, no. The Astros would be it, and Altuve, okay. I think, would be the one that I circle. I hate the Angels for a very different reason, because they've wasted 10 years of the greatest baseball player in history.
It's crazy.
So, again, that's a fundamental dislike of the organization, because how the Angels managed to screw that decade up as badly as they have, I have no idea. So I hate them for that reason.
Well, they're picking it back up. It's funny that you literally, without even looking at these questions, have led me into the next question. You're going to laugh when I do this. John Gross?
Next question.
All right. My pick, by the way, Trevor, of course, just to add to this point, I've picked the Angels to be good for the last 5 years, and finally, they're good. So, you know,
a broken clock is right twice a day.
Blind squirrel, right, or the clock, yeah, analogy. The Angels are in first. Now, Houston and Seattle a little bit back. Are we finally done with the Astros? Like, I know they're still good, but are we done all of a sudden seeing the Astros in the playoffs, then all of a sudden seeing them in the ALCS with a chance to get to the World Series? I'm done with them.
I don't think they're done.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
Jose Altuve is still hitting.
I mean, look, Altuve is still good. Bregman's a really good baseball player.
He's so good, and he's so cocky.
They've replaced Carlos Correa with this kid, Jeremy Pena, who's almost doubling his output so far this year.
That's fantastic.
He's an excellent young shortstop that they have a lot of control over. And Kyle Tucker has future AL MVP written all over. So I don't think we're done with the Astros at all. I think they're right there.
Okay. They still have Crawford's box in left field or whatever.
They do. Of course, they got rid of the hill.
Yeah.
In
dumbest
center field,
thing ever in
but
baseball.
They do have the boxes in left
okay.
and the train track up above.
Still kind of strange.
Yeah.
And you remember the whole Enron thing, or do
you
remember
that? Yeah,
yeah. Okay, you were a little bit younger. All right, Johnny.
Next question.
Okay, the Rockies. We talked about this the other day. The Rockies are like only a game and a half or two or whatever out of first place in a division, Trevor, not that you don't know this, that includes the Dodgers, the Giants, and the Padres, who are all like battling it out.
They're basically tied, more or less.
Kudos to the Padres, by the way, doing this without Tatis Jr. If they can hang around that Padres team, it'd be fun to get Tatis back with a chance, you know, let's say within three games of whoever's leading that division.
Yep.
Do you take the Rockies seriously?
No.
Okay. It's kind of like the Astros with the, are they done? No.
I don't take the
you
Rockies.
You do not. Okay.
I think that they probably have enough. They have enough
even
there.
Even with the cool guy pitching?
To be a mediocre team. Like, German Marquez is an okay pitcher.
Yeah. Is Camargo on that team, or is he?
Camargo?
Yeah, the last name Camargo.
Johan Camargo's on the Braves, I think.
Oh, he's on the Braves. You know, I'm from Camargo.
Although maybe he moved to the Rockies. I'm not sure.
I think you're right. I think he's still with the Braves.
No, he's on the Phillies. Take it all back.
Okay. You know, I'm from Camargo, so he's kind of one of my favorite players, even though I've never.
They're one of those teams that's off to a decent start, and then we'll laugh about it in August when they've lost 15 of 20. But I don't want to see my boy Chris Bryant go down in flames, but I mean, look, I'm not counting on them to be in the wild card race.
Well, they're doing this. Where's John Gross?
Next question.
The Rockies are doing this without your boy, Chris Bryant, showing any kind of power.
That's right.
And we talked about this, but Chris Bryant, what, this week, still zero home runs leading into this week. And you're just like, what? Now, this is a big question here. What do you make of his career down the road? Because when Chris Bryant was a rookie, he arguably could have been the MVP of baseball. So do you feel like Chris Bryant still has the ability to be one of the best players in baseball for the next 10 years?
No.
Or do you feel like it's not going to happen?
I'm going to answer every question you're asking.
Is it all the shoulder thing?
No.
Was it his shoulder?
Yes. It was a diving catch that he made years ago now.
Isn't that amazing?
And it just screwed him up. He didn't hit above like 200 the rest of that year.
No.
And then a few weeks later was when he got plunked in the head in Colorado. They said it was just it was a concussion.
Yeah.
You know, but it just seemed like something went off the rails there. He said in the off season after that he had surgery on the shoulder and he was better. And then I believe it was the COVID season, like 10 or 15 games in, they're in Cleveland playing the now Guardians. He dives and sort of he didn't come out of the game or anything, but he just sort of agitated that shoulder again.
Yeah.
And again, was not the same the rest of that shortened COVID season. So
that's amazing.
It's hard to count on a guy like that to suddenly bounce back in a big way. I think Colorado helps because of A, obviously the elevation, and B, the ballpark are certainly hitter friendly.
Sure.
To say the least.
No doubt.
So he can put up good numbers for the rest of his career. But in terms of that rookie campaign and then the second season where you're looking at it going, oh my god, this guy could be like one of the all-time great third baseman or something, you know, four World Series, he hits 300 every year with 40 bombs. It's just not gonna it's not gonna be that way, which saddens me.
It is. It's too bad, honestly, because I've always liked Chris Bryant.
I mean, I'm glad that, you know, he's from Nevada, he's from Las Vegas, so I'm glad he's in that area. He seems to like Colorado. He's got a huge contract there.
That's cool.
I wouldn't complain about playing in Denver, Colorado.
No.
That's for sure. So he seems to be happy as a person, but it's unfortunate that he's probably I don't want to sound like I'm writing his, you know, his baseball obituary already. I mean,
somebody just turned in, they're like, what happened to Chris Bryant?
He's 29, you know. I don't want to just say like but I just don't think he's ever going to be that good of a player
That's
again
fair.
On that elite level. I think he's going to hit. I'll go out on a limb and say I think he will hit at least 2 home runs this year.
Okay. I think I'm with you on that, especially in Colorado. But it is kind of weird to see his home run total. Not that people are just screaming with home runs already this season, but it's interesting that he's not doing more. I'll put it that way. All right, last one, John Groza.
Next question.
The Phillies.
The Johan Camargos.
Yes. Are like under 500, and they have a loaded lineup. Derek Piper had him winning this division. Now, we got a long way to go here, so there's no reason. We're early May, so there's no reason why they still couldn't. Obviously, the Mets are off to a good start in that division, but like Atlanta's struggling. They're under 500. But the Phillies, with such a loaded lineup, does this prove that pitching is still the key to winning games in Major League Baseball?
This is a very philosophical.
That's big time, isn't it?
Next question that you've put together.
And here, I will say this, whenever the Cardinals, and I have to go to my go-to because that's obviously the team I pay attention to more than anything. When the Cardinals have won, it's always because they have a pitcher or two that is dominant at the helm. You know, at least one ace. And I feel like the Phillies, who have some fairly solid pitchers, it seems like they just are struggling. And I just, in your mind, would you rather load up on offense or load up on pitching?
Well, see, that's tough because, I mean, the way the Cubs did it.
Yeah, the Cubs did all offensively.
They did all offense, but then they still loaded up on pitching, but it was through free agency.
That's a good point.
It was Lackey, it was Lester, it was Hendricks in a trade from the Rangers. Like, it wasn't any homegrown talent. But
fair enough.
But I don't want to characterize that Cubs run as it was offense heavy and pitcher light because they got Chapman. Like, they had really good pitchers.
They
it's
did.
Just they acquired them a different way. I think you're right to answer the question. It does, because the Phillies are 5th in runs, 6th in home runs, and 5th in batting average.
Wow.
So the offense has not been the problem so far for the Phillies. I think the two things you look at are the pitching and the defense.
Yeah, good point. I think defense is huge.
I don't want to speak out of turn, so let me navigate my way over here, but I want to say that they either lead the league in errors.
Oh, wow.
Or our second. There are still 3 teams that have less than 2 errors this year.
Oh, really?
The Royals and the Yankees.
Well, you just jinxed the Royals into about 10 tonight. I'm okay with that.
The White Sox lead the league, and the Phillies are in second in errors. So you look at that, and you look at
– and both teams, like, right around or below the 500.
Yep. So, and both teams struggling with their pitching, whether it's the depth and the injuries with the White Sox or just the quality of the pitching itself with the Phillies. The Phillies are – 28th out of 30th in ERA.
Wow.
So, I mean, I don't want to oversimplify it and
time
just say,
time to bring Ryan Sandberg back.
Here's their average and here's their ERA, and that's why. But, I mean, honestly, it's a problem.
It is a problem.
Because guys that they counted on to be really good haven't been good yet.
Aaron Nola.
Ranger Suarez, you know, was supposed to be like.
Is Wheeler still on there?
Hot, underrated guy. Wheeler's been good.
Yeah, he has been.
Eflin has not been good for them. It's just a lot
that
of.
That Eflin.
It's just a lot of meh for the Phillies.
That Eflin Wheeler, you know, combination.
That's
just
right.
Hasn't been very solid.
Eflin.
If your name was Lynn, that wouldn't be good.
You know, there's a guy on the Mets whose name is Mark Canha. Have you seen him?
Yeah. He had a home run the other day.
C-A-N-H-A.
Yeah.
Canha. And for some reason, whenever they say his name, I just think, can a guy catch a break?
Oh, that's cool.
That'd be a good fantasy team name.
I like that.
But.
Dude, Trevor bringing out the big
bullets. I made a pun about the Mets' 12th best hitter. I'm sure no one appreciates it.
It's probably time to finish the show.
That is a signal.
That's probably.
When I'm breaking out bad dad jokes like that, it's a signal to wrap it up.
Let's just wrap it up before Piper gets in here and actually does a bad dad joke now that he's a dad. I don't think I ever did bad dad jokes.
I mean, you have a lot of dad quirks to you.
I do.
But I wouldn't characterize like punny jokes as one of them.
That's fair.
If anything, whenever we do a pun segment on Tay and Carp,
I'm horrible at it.
You'd never understand. You had some really good ones, and by really good, I mean really bad. For instance, my favorite, Indiana had Bobby, but Rutgers have the Knights. And somehow that was a Bobby Knight pun.
And you're just like, Lon, just leave it to us and let us do the puns. Ah, the memories, right? The good old days. All right. Well, listen, again, thanks to Clint Howard, Sam Knox, coming in and talking about the state of officiating right now. We need officials. It's that simple. So Certainly, if that's something that you're interested in doing, you can make decent money at it. And you know, I've got a couple buddies, like Jeff Davis being one I mentioned, you know, is a guy that just loves the game of baseball, and he goes out and does it because he wants to see baseball continue. So it is a problem, and certainly one that I hope gets corrected so we can have officials in the future. And I'm not talking about Major League Baseball and the robot officials for sure. All right, thanks to those guys. Let's get out of here.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Everybody enjoy your Wednesday night. Thursday is tomorrow. Let's roll. We'll see you then. It is The Drive.